A selected reading this morning is a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye. Naomi is a white American poet with Palestinian Muslim heritage. This is called Different Ways to Pray. There was the method of kneeling, a fine method if you lived in a country where stones were smooth. The women dreamed wistfully of bleached courtyards, hidden corners where knees hit rock. Their prayers were weathered rib bones, small calcium words uttered in sequence, as if this shedding of syllables could somehow find them and fuse them to the sky. There were the men who had been shepherds so long they walked like sheep. Under the olive trees they raised their arms. Hear us. We have pain on earth. We have so much pain there is no place to store it. But the olives bobbed peacefully in fragrant buckets of vinegar and thyme. At night, the men ate heartily, flat bread and white cheese, and were happy in spite of the pain, because there was also happiness. Some prized the pilgrimage, wrapping themselves in new white linen to ride buses across miles of vacant sand. When they arrived at Mecca, they would circle the holy places on foot many times. They would bend to kiss the earth and return their lean faces housing mystery. While for certain cousins and grandmothers, the pilgrimage occurred daily, lugging water from the spring or balancing the basket of grapes. These were the ones present at birth, humming quietly to perspiring mothers. The ones stitching intricate needlework into children's dresses, forgetting how easily children soil clothes. There were those who didn't care about praying. The young ones, the ones who had been to America. They told the old ones, "You're wasting your time." Time? The old ones prayed for the young ones. They prayed for Allah to mend their brains, for the twig, the round moon, to speak suddenly in a commanding tone. And occasionally there would be one who did none of this. That old man Fauzi, for example. Fauzi the fool, who beat everyone at dominoes, insisted he spoke with God as he spoke with goats, and was famous for his laugh. That just seemed like the perfect entree to our guest speaker this morning. I had the pleasure of meeting Imam Abdullah Polovina last spring when we hosted the Sarajevo Roses documentary here. The Bosniaks came out in force from Southeast Portland, and that was when I met Abdullah and his beautiful wife and children. And it became very clear to us that we were, in fact, part of this building beloved community here in Portland. And it seemed right that at some point in time, we invite Abdullah to come and share with us what it's like to be a Bosniak. I can't get used to that. I keep saying Bosnian. But Bosniaks in America, they've been here now for a good 20 years, having escaped the war. And we are so grateful to have them. So Abdullah this morning has agreed to talk with us about his own personal journey to God. And
We will have some time after this talk if you would like to ask questions. We're very happy to have you this morning. Come.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good. This is Elijah Osman Rahim. In the name of God, the compassionate, the most merciful. My dear friends, first of all, I would like to greet you with the greeting of Islam. The greeting is greeting of peace. Assalamu alaikum. May peace be with you all, and I wish you good morning. I'm really pleased and privileged to be this morning here, this beautiful Sunday day. By the way, we have ordered this day today. I'm really happy and glad, so I'd like to thank to my friend, and I can say sister, Sulima, for this connection. I think we build good relationship and that how we call trust, because that's something that is really needed today. And also I see this as an opportunity, you know, to kind of, you know, time by time come together and share, you know, who we are. And actually, I'm especially kind of happy because this, in some sense, gives me a hope that despite all differences, we live in a time that we need each other. So we really need each other, and I was thinking, you know, today is the, you know, Veterans Day and end of the World War. Just one thought I wanted to share. I was not playing, but I was thinking about that. Actually, I can say for myself that I'm kind of veteran because I was part of that terrible war in Bosnia. I will share some personal things that kind of touched my heart and that search for God. And because, to let you know, my friends, what we have fought over there in Bosnia, those are the values that is pretty much rooted in the American values. So we fought there for justice, for, you know, equality for all and everything. So we are just as your, veterans of America, and we are actually, and coming here actually found that those values, you know, so we are pretty much same, you know, in that sense. And also, I put some notes here that kind of helped me to flow my thoughts this morning. But to be honest, I'm giving certain time, so, you know, how they say, you know, don't give cell phone to teenager, and don't give mic to imam or pastor. So we'll see, you know, how this will go. So first point I would like to share, as we all know, you know, nothing is stable or static in this world. Everything moves, you know, by time. Sometimes those things that we are, we can moving around, bring us kind of new experience, new energy. And for me personally, you know, coming here and although Bosniak, actually to maybe say the Bosniak, K Bosniak, this is the national name, or let it be for Muslims in Bosnia. Bosnia is kind of national, you know, like American, you know, like. So that is kind of, so our name of organization is because all Muslims are kind of that national ethnic, you know, at least we go the Bosniaks, yeah. Well, one of the parts, kind of maybe I can, I'll try to divide this my kind of talk, three points, three parts, like first maybe a little bit personal, you know, maybe second about, you know, how I understand God, you know, what all those, how I kind of found God. And I will end with one prayer, you know, because I think, I will mention that again, we in America kind of start souling, you know, we need kind of to more get together and, you know, invite God, God's mercy, you know, to be, you know, and that we can do our part and invite God to do His part, you know, so. And in this first part, actually, I kind of compare my journey, because each of us has some kind of journey, but especially a spiritual journey. So I compare that my spiritual journey as a, you know, bird falcon. You know, some birds fly low, some birds fly high. The falcon is a bird that flies high, you know, and likes to be free, you know. So my that spiritual journey kind of as falcon started when I was kind of 7 years old. I lived with my parents, you know, one small part, in the city of Sarajevo, the capital city close to airport, international airport. So I think I was in the second grade, and you know, time by time I see some of my friends that are going, you know, to one place there close to the mosque, you know, when we were coming back from the school. So I was thinking where they are going. In one sense, so they invited me, and I was thinking maybe I should go to check, you know, what is there. So it was kind of weekend school, you know, but sometime maybe one or couple days was during the work times, days to have that school about Islamic teaching faith and so on. So that spiritual journey actually started there when I was 7 years old. I went with my friends to there, and I, you know, started to go regularly. And that is something, you know, to kind of start that kind of, if I can say, the first sacred call in my life, you know. I was living with my parents, actually. At one point, my parents got divorced, so I was living with my mom. So she's a very religious woman, so kind of, in some sense, she planted those seeds of faith in my heart, in myself. And I was, you know, going to that weekend school, you know, kind of learning about faith, learning about, you know, Muslims, Islam, and so on. And this part, I mean, I mentioned my mom. I would like just to share one portion of that life during the war. It was May of 1993. I'm in the middle of war. I was living in one part of Sarajevo, close to airport called Dobrinja. My mom was living in other part, you know, in the center of city center. So I didn't know anything about her, you know. I was living with my partner, because when my dad passed away, you know, that's his kind of small apartment. So I was living there, kind of trying to survive. One point when I was searching for the way how to visit my mom, so here, because no phones, nothing, so, you know, disconnected. And you heard something, you know, when you get some electricity, you know, some news, but you don't know about particular people, you know, how they are doing. So one point, you know, I kind of went through, because there is one kind of barricade between Dobrinja and other part of Sarajevo, the snipers constantly, you know. So we put some barricades, you know, that people can go through. And I remember I was going in the car, and I heard, you know, the sound of sniper. At one point I just, you know, touched my leg, my left leg, actually, the bullet going through the car and hit my left leg. So I just kind of explained that I got shot. So on the way we went to that hospital, and I met there one of my cousins, so they did some procedure, you know, clean my wounds, so it was okay, you know. And she told me actually good news that my mom is alive. So, and you know, I remember, because in Dobrinja we were getting some humanitarian aid, you know, more than maybe the rest of the city, because it comes to airport, you know, it's United Nations, and then through some roads there. So I collected, because I was living alone, you know, one bag, you know, and to give it, getting, you know, to give to my mom. So that was really, you know, something that stayed for all my life, and I met my mom, you know, in the door, and, you know, maybe that was one of the parts that I realized, actually, you know, God, in some sense, you know, because during the war, you know, you got sometimes some permits, you know, how long you can be absent, you know, leave from the army, because I was a part, we were defending, you know, we were, every person was important to be there. So I mean, the plan was maybe a couple of days, 3 days to be there. Sure, I stayed maybe almost 1 month. So that bomb actually, you know, was the reason, you know, so that how we believe in one sense of that written destiny, that, you know. So I stayed with my mom, enjoyed the food, enjoyed her presence, you know, so that memory was so something that will live, you know, all the time with me. And actually I wrote some, you know, essay about this, you know, something. That was something that during the war I was, aside of, you know, being in army, you know, working with people, you know, kind of to help them to realize actually that in all those temptations, you know, because people are poor, hungry, you know, thirsty, you know, so many temptations, you know, tests over there, and, you know, to realize that God is only one true friend, you know. Just you need to rely on Him honestly, you know, pray, do what we need to as, you know, people of that kind of God's creation, you know, in that sense. So that was kind of a realization at one point of my life. I was young, maybe, kind of teenage, a little bit older, you know. And so that part was something that is pretty much personal, kind of emotional, but also helped me to realize that, how we say, God's existence, you know, and being there. So the second, the next one is actually, I think, in 2002, you know, war started, you know, I started to work as Imam in one mosque in Sarajevo. So one point, I think it was 2000, I remember, you know, I got called to do one, you know, funeral prayer, and I met one guy there. Actually, I found that he actually married my cousin, and they lived in Seattle, Washington. So I prayed, you know, we did funeral for his father, and one point he told me after we, you know, visit his home, you know, do some prayers and something, and he mentioned to me, okay, I would like to invite you to come to visit me and, you know, people of Bosniak and family in Seattle. So I was, oh wow, yeah. In some sense, because during the war, at one point you wish, you know, just to change the environment, change, you know, for... So what happened actually, you know, it did it. It went through certain procedure, you know, and in 2000 was holy month of Ramadan. I came to Seattle just to be for 1 month, you know, because that's a special time and season for us Muslims, you know. And after, I remember we formed a kind of community organization, you know, registered, I think, in Olympia, the capital place. And then one point they asked me, you know, we would like to that you can stay with us, you know. And I was, because I didn't play, I had a job in Bosnia. And so it kind of, they insisted, so I told them maybe there is procedure, I don't know. But it ended up that I returned to Seattle, and I was Imam there for 12 years. So maybe that was in some sense my second sacred call, you know. Sometimes you just don't know. To be honest, when we talk, you know, among Bosnians, you know, family gathering, community gathering, time, but you can hear that people, they have no, in dreams, they have no, any imagination. At one point they will come in America, but all the way, you know, because from middle of Europe, you fly, you over the Europe, over the ocean, over the all America, come here, you know. But that is something that you want to realize, actually, that actually God is there to lead us in our life. Just there is a reason why we are here. Maybe this is the reason, and I'm grateful for this. Maybe this is the one of reason that God sent me to America. To meet you, to, you know, build this relationship, to get to know each other. And what is important to, you know, realize that spiritual journey that, you know, next I'll talk about this, that will not end in this world. So we live together here that we can build our relationship not just for this world but the next one. You know, eternal, that we will find the true peace and those something that maybe we will miss during our life here. So that was, you know, and the part of this maybe, let's say, sacred call is, you know, to be honest, in Bosnia I had a wish, you know, to kind of continue my education, you know. And I was stopped because of the war. So coming to America, you know, at one point when I went to protest for, you know, getting the papers, you know, green card and citizenship, you know, I finished my, you know, the college there in Seattle, the University of Washington, UW, I finished my degree in comparative religion. And then at the same time, you know, like we have our umbrella organization, you know, a few imams, we finished, there is one seminary, I think, at the Cloverdale College in Indiana, the Theological Foundation, and I finished some kind of Islamic studies there, like bachelor. And then maybe, if I can say, maybe the third sacred call was interesting for me, because during my life in Seattle for 12 years, you meet people, you know, you get together, especially as man, as leader, you know, you fly around, you know, you see like, you know, fly, you just want to, you know, it's something, sometimes it's hard to explain, you know, you as leader, you know, and sometimes people have no, I don't know how to say, kind of, sometimes you think maybe people should have more understanding of what we are doing, you know, something is inside that as leaders, you know, just, you know, force you in some sense to do some things. And people, you know, it's hard for us, for me as leader, to explain that just lead you this, you know, to do some things. So at one point I was a member of the Interfaith Council in Seattle University, and there was one school of theology and ministry, and I met one nice and kind person, you know, Dr. Mark McCooley. He was the dean of the School of Theology and Ministry. At one point, you know, we were doing some, you know, gatherings, events like celebrating or commemorating things, and so inviting me as imam, as Muslim, you know, to be part of that. At one point I ended up sitting with him, you know, thinking maybe I was thinking maybe to do, you know, some more education, you know. And he showed me one flyer about transformational leadership. And so I ended up, you know, going there, and that was the master. So I did my master there. I started, and then I moved to Portland. So almost 2 years I was commuting from Portland to Seattle to finish, you know, my degree. And I ended up, and I was so happy, you know. And actually I was the first imam, the Muslim cleric or minister or pastor that actually attended to Catholic University. I mean, there are some other Muslims, you know. But it was interesting. At one point they told me that. And that was actual encouragement. After that, I think I saw one other imam when there's so many nice people, pastors, different faiths, different, you know, backgrounds. And you see how that was beautiful, our conversation, discussion, you know, how we actually, those differences, there we can put in the level of understanding, not like this story of Fox, and, you know, constantly avoiding, you know. But sometimes it's good to have some, you know, kind of, not physical fight, but maybe that fight, and, you know, kind of argument to get to the point that we understand actually who we are, you know, in some sense. But that was a good experience. And the this part that I will actually to be kind of some conclusion about that kind of search for God. Maybe most of you some time by time ask, or maybe heard of, you know, about question, or maybe ask who you are. Are you Muslim? You know, like something like that. Maybe the following question could be, why are you Muslim? Maybe you can think, you know, Imam, why are you Muslim? You know, okay, maybe we know you are Muslim, but why? So maybe sometimes it's answered easy because you were born in a Muslim family. Yeah, maybe that is, could be for us Muslims answer. But point is, if we were not born in a Muslim family, will we still be Muslim? You know, how to understand it. So that was something during my life. Yes, I was born in a Muslim family, Muslim environment, in some sense. You know, I'm in Bosnia, multicultural, multi-faith country, you know, almost like America, you know. But point is, you know, you live in certain environment that you understand what's going on, you know. But through the life, you know, I asked those questions. One of those questions was like this, you know, why I'm Muslim, you know. Sometimes I share my sermon with Muslims just to remind ourselves to kind of think about these, you know, in some sense. Just maybe, you know, a couple points before I kind of say something more about understanding why I'm Muslim, why I choose to be Muslim in my faith, Islam. Just to, you know, understand about Islam, the kind of the really true meaning, you know, not what kind of some media or some people that did, you know, kind of wanted to manufacture some evil things among us. But Islam, what is the true meaning and how we practice in Muslim tribes, you know, practice that faith. You know, and to be honest, sometimes we as practicing Muslims are so under pressure. For some of those Muslims, they did some acts that no any way, any you know, kind of attachment to Islam. And then we, and then sometimes people, why don't you ask those Muslims who are not coming to mosque or don't pray everything? You know, why we are all the time kind of in some sense, you know, kind of under the pressure, you know, to give all those answers or even do some excuses. I mean, this is something that, you know, we need to, you know, kind of reflect time after time. So the word Islam meaning is submission, surrender or obedience to the will of God. We all have our wills, but the most powerful will is the will of God. So when we realize that we believe God, we find the God, we need to surrender also to His will, you know, freely, not by force, freely, you realize, you know. So it derives from the root word salam, meaning peace. So those who are trying to perform these acts of peace are called kind of Islams, or we say Muslims. Or maybe under that we can use Islamers. You know. So that is, you know, and the one of the main teaching that below Prophet taught us is, you know, that when you are in company of Muslims, just you need to feel safe. Safe. And Prophet mentioned this, it is not among us, member of us, or Muslim Islam, one, that people are not safe in his or her presence. This is something that we really need to understand. And that is the root meaning. And to be honest, you know, this term terrorism, if you read Quran, no term there. This is modern term. There is no determining in our holy book, in our narration of Prophet, below Prophet, no. This is something that is imposed, you know, on us unfortunately, and we still kind of, but you know, we believe, we all have struggles, you know. But point is to understand the true meaning of life and true meaning of certain states that we, you know, practice. So, I can say, by defining this, Islam recognizes that humankind has free choice in whether to obey or disobey God. But ultimately, we will be held accountable to God in the next life for the choices that we make in this life. I mean, sometimes this life we make some choices and we are held accountable. Maybe somebody say, don't go there, but you go there. Okay, you choose, but you will be, I mean, accountable. So one story here, like, why Islam? Why people choose certain faiths, why Islam? Maybe at a psychological level, we may ask, what drives people to and from religion? So there is one famous fable, you know, Aesop's fable about ant and grasshopper, I don't know. Have you heard about that? You know, the conversation between ant and grasshopper, you know, like the scripture is kind of in short, like grasshopper was enjoying the summer, you know, hopping, you know, around and enjoying the weather. And he one point he saw ant kind of bearing along with great toil and ear of corn, he was taking the nest, you know. Then the grasshopper asked, why not come and chat with me, said the grasshopper. Instead of toiling and moiling in the way, I am helping to lay up food for the winter, answered the ant, and recommend you to do the same. Why bother about winter, said the grasshopper. We have got plenty of food at present. But the ant went on its way and continued its toil. When winter came, the grasshopper found itself dying of hunger while it saw the ants distributing every day corn and grain from the stores they had collected in the summer. Then the grasshopper knew it is best to prepare for the days of necessity. In my opinion, this story tells about us, the human race. Indeed, there are two kinds of people in this world. Just thinking about present. I mean, there are two futures. So there is future in this world. Like, you are not preparing you for some days after. And the big level is the future next life that I will finish later about, you know, this teaching. So this is something like, for example, the one who enjoys gambling is thrilled with the feeling of the present prospect of winning, and is not concerned with the likely prospect of losing everything in a long term. You know, I mean, here you heard that there is some kind of even warning sign, some sense that gambling is getting really dangerous here for the family, for the, you know, people. Or the one who commits the sin of adultery is satisfied with the present moments of pleasure without any concern about what that sin may bring tomorrow. Be that an illegitimate child, divorce, or unhappiness. How they take 5 minutes of joy destroy your whole life? So this is something that, you know, sometimes we need to think about this. So, and just to finish, one of the questions in my search of God is the purpose of life. Because in Islam I found the purpose of life. Why are we here in this world, and where are we going after we die? Sometimes we need to pose those questions to ourselves, to our friends, maybe like gathering like this. Because we know we will leave this world one time. So, to a Muslim, the whole purpose of life is ibadah, or worship, do some acts of worship to the one true Almighty God on terms and under his condition. Because in our holy book he mentioned that he created us to worship him. The reason why he created us to worship him, to be kind of constantly in remembrance and connection with God. So Islam teaches us that this life is only a test of trial for the individuals to show him her true nature. You know, during the life, you know, when we are happy, we expressing and showing our nature. When we are sad or unhappy, we actually show. And so we need to kind of make that balance in our life, how to express and show ourselves in those times. So kind of the finish this part is the first, the teaching life, Islam, the first life is a test. The life in the grave is a resting or waiting place before the day of judgment. The day of judgment brings about the clear understanding of what will happen to the individual based on his or her own desires and actions. And the permanent or afterlife will either be spent in luxurious splendor or miserable punishment. So those are the steps or levels that Islam teaches how to understand this life. This is what kind of demands of a believer. So this believer, for sure, coming to the grave, will ask a question, now what? What is next? What will happen to me? Because of that present joy. We need to get ready for, you know, that next life. And I will finish in summary. So when observing this world of ours, we should, in my opinion, have in mind two kinds of people, those interested in their present only, whether it be a day, a month, a year, or the whole life, and those who think about future, both the future in this world and the future in the hereafter. Those who are concerned about their future inevitably ask questions such as, who am I, where I'm going, what is my final destination? There is a great probability that questions like this will lead people to religion and belief in God. Those who are only concerned with their present will be content with today and will not pay attention to what the next day will bring. They do not have any motivation to think about their future or about their life as whole in all its segments. Eventually, a mindset like this will lead to obliviousness, ignorance, and disbelief. And I will finish one prayer, and that will be for me today. As I mentioned, so our country, America, is soul searching, and we as individuals are forever in need of God's guidance and protection. So I ask God to look upon us, to guide us, to live our lives in ways that are most pleasing to God. I ask God to put peace in our hearts that we may spread it to all of those around us. I ask God to protect us from being people of injustice, that we may purify the world of it. And I recognize that it's up to us to say, O God, you did not create us for bigotry and vengeance. You did not create us to dominate or oppress one another. You did not create us for war. We are not the ones to judge who should live and who should die. O dear God, make us those who are never embarrassed by our faith, nor those who embarrass others because of the faith they choose to practice. O God, we choose today to live by the hope that you have instilled within us, not the fears that others manufacture amongst us. And with that we pray to you, the one God of Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, and us all, for one America and for one world. Amen. Thank you. God bless you.